Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with David Bibb, Acting Administrator at the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us in our conversation is Marty Wagner, Senior Fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government. David, can you review the value of a central provider like GSA? But more specifically, with more than 10,000 contract holders on GSA's scheduled contracts, how has the agency streamlined its e-procurement program and eased the administrative burden on your employees?
Well, the value of a central provider is that we really and truly can buy goods and services at tremendous discounts versus what a single agency could do on its own. We do allow agencies the freedom. For example, we set up airline contracts between all the major U.S. cities, and they should look at those first. But if they can go on one of the search engines online and find a cheaper rate, that's okay. They can do that. But our contracts with the airlines allow you to book 1 hour before the flight leaves. You get that set price. If you cancel, you can cancel right up to the time of the flight. Just all kinds of flexibilities that you can't get with an internet deal. We buy automobiles and provide them to the agencies at least 25% off what you could find anywhere else. When we're able to pool requirements, we know that we can buy software sometimes at 15% of what buying a single item would be. So a central provider just can aggregate that buying power. And whether we're guaranteeing a level of purchases, which we do in some of our programs, in other programs we simply give vendors the opportunity to make themselves available to federal buyers. That's called our multiple award schedule program. Still, they know that when they're on schedule, they're obligated to offer their lowest, at least their lowest commercial price or to their most favored customer. And then agencies can negotiate a price below that. So that's the central agency value proposition. And the same goes for public buildings. It doesn't make any sense in Washington, D.C., for example, to have 25 different agencies out in the Washington real estate market competing against each other. And we can make better use of our inventory by assigning and reassigning people to space. And I want to mention one more thing about being a central provider. We have the ability to channel a lot of these purchases to groups like small businesses, service-disabled veteran-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, and so on. And we do that. We do it very, very well. We're one of the highest rates of contracts with those groups of any federal agency. And then talking about simplifying the process, we have, under our previous administrator, Loretta Doan, we made a real concerted effort to cut down the amount of time it takes vendors to get on the GSA schedule. And we actually have succeeded in getting some on at 30 days or less, which is versus 6 months or more. So that's helped. We have a number of, you mentioned e-tools. We have things like to help our customers e-buy, where you can simply go in and go to our multiple award schedules. If you're an agency that's required to get three bids and for a certain dollar volume contract you are, you simply plug that into our tool. It will evaluate the offers and pop out the best deals that we have on the multiple award schedule. We have a lot of tools to help our employees deal with the volume of work that they have to do, from automated systems that lead you through making a contract. We're particularly strong on that in the public building service, to upgrades in our financial system that make them much easier to work. But we couldn't do it without automation. We are basically, I mentioned we have 12,000 employees. We're basically an agency of contractors and contracting officers who are seeking to pull all of these goods and services and buildings together so that other agencies can either order against our contracts themselves or use our experts. We do have experts to assist them in putting together a set of requirements. So we're heavily dependent upon e-tools, both for the vendors that we interface with our clients, and to help our people process-wise too.
Now, David, you mentioned briefly buildings and properties. Could you tell us a little bit more about your work in policy involving real property and assessment management? Mm-hmm. What have you done to sort of enhance the efforts in this area?
Well, a lot of what I did actually occurred before I became deputy administrator in 2003. I remain involved in it because most of my career has been in real estate, on the real estate side of GSA with the Public Building Service, and then for several years in the Office of Government-Wide Policy. But probably the most effective thing that I did while I was in the Office of Government-Wide Policy was to put forth a comprehensive piece of legislation which would have amended the 1949 Act for the first time in the real property area in 55 years or so. We put forth to the Congress a whole series of changes, asking every property holding agency to name a federal real property officer. They would then come together in a council. We had provisions for improving the database of federal real property. Many agencies had no idea what they owned or leased worldwide. And we also had some creative tools in there that would have given agencies the opportunity, not just GSA, but other agencies the opportunity to retain proceeds if they sold a building and to enter into contracts that would, in effect, spread the cost of a project over time. And we were very careful at how we structured that. The end result was we got passage unanimously by two committees in the House. Both they were unanimous, bipartisan approval. We ran into some difficulties with the Congressional Budget Office on the how those were scored against the federal budget, and a real difference of opinion with them. But it was serious enough that it led to the legislation being stopped in its tracks. But out of that came conversations with the Office of Management and Budget, in which they said, well, let's do what we can that was in your bill under executive order. So the president did issue an executive order on real property management, and that called for the naming of a senior real property official in each agency, the formation of a federal real property council, the establishment of a government-wide database, all of which have been done, and all of which the Government Accountability Office has recognized as really good practices. What is still left to be done is this issue of how do we get the money to do the renovations that everybody needs to do. But I'm very proud of some of the efforts that I was involved in there to make something happen. And there's still discussions going on, even with OMB now, that I have participated in even within the last month about what can we do about this problem of not having the cash on the barrel. None of us, whether we have a mortgage crisis or not, I still don't see anybody going out and paying cash for a $400,000 house. There's another way to do it, and that's the position we're in. If we're going to renovate our home, we have to have the $200,000 in hand to do it, using home as a metaphor for a building. If we're going to buy a new house, we would have to have the $200,000 or $300,000 cash in hand, which, of course, is not the way the world really works. But that is the way the federal budgeting process works. Been very supportive of efforts in the Public Building Service to what we call tier their inventory, T-I-E-R. Their inventory is layered into three levels. Number one are the real money-making buildings where we must reinvest. The scarce dollars we have that we collect from the agencies and rent go into a fund, and from that fund we allocate as much money as we possibly can to those tier one buildings. Then we have on the other end of the spectrum tier three buildings, which there's just not much reason to keep them, and we'll try to sell those or dispose of them otherwise. And then we have tier two in the middle, which with proper investment could become profitable. And profit, I'm only saying profit because we can't have a whole inventory of buildings that lose money. We have to make operating expenses off that inventory. So I've been very supportive of that, and that continues today.
David, GSA has made some significant management and financial changes to procurement operations over the last 5 years. Would you elaborate on these efforts, and how have these changes enhanced accountability, transparency, and delivery of services to customers?
Well, Marty, in some parts of our business, we just didn't have any choice. We were doing some things. I don't think anybody was intentionally doing anything wrong, but things, for example, that were being bought under information technology contracts clearly weren't information technology. And I won't go into details about that, but that was happening. So we had to go back about 3.5 years or so ago and make sure that everybody understood the rules and were buying proper things on behalf of other agencies through the proper vehicles and the proper accounts. So we straightened all that out. At that time, we had a program called Get It Right, which was another initiative that I chaired, another one where we brought everybody around the table, as I talked about. And the whole reason for doing that was we simply had no choice but to contract correctly. There was even legislation passed in the Defense Authorization Bill that said, start doing it right or defense won't do business with you anymore. And we were subsequently in that law. It called for a review by the DOD-IG and the GSA-IG, so we had to get our act together. At the same time, we weren't always handling agencies' funding correctly. We have revolving funds. Agencies generally have funds that expire at the end of 1 year. what we were doing was taking some of that one-year money, putting it under our fund, and it magically became multi-year money, which is not a correct way in our view, although there had been some legal opinions at the time that said it was okay. It's not, we did not, no longer view that as okay, so we had to straighten that out. In the middle of that, we lost our clean audit opinion after like 17 straight years of having a clean audit opinion. So we had to change the way we were acquiring goods and services to be sure we were having competition, to be sure that statements of work weren't being written to steer work to a particular contractor. And we don't do that anymore. And we handle agencies' money correctly now. And we regained our clean audit. And all of those things were wrenching changes and caused us in some cases to lose some business because some agencies had grown used to tell GSA what you want and GSA will go buy it for you. And we had to change that. But I believe today it's a value add. It's a competitive advantage. I think agencies can trust us to do it correctly, to handle their money correctly, which is important to them, and to go through the procurement process so we don't have protests and they don't have problems with their own inspector general. So major changes over the last 5 years, particularly on the federal acquisition side of the house, that have made us better.
Thanks. Now, David, what has GSA done to enhance and transform its customer service capability? To what extent, for example, has GSA One Voice captured the intent of your integrated approach to produce greater value for customers and bring your organization closer to its vision of one face to the customer?
Well, we have done a couple of things to enhance our customer service capability. Both our public building service and our federal acquisition service have put together very strong customer relationship groups, both in the headquarters and in the field. They've both made major progress in scheduling visits with their customers, talking with them about their needs. The big problem I saw was the two groups weren't talking to each other, and we had two GSAs out there interfacing with our customers. So one thing I have been working very hard to do is to bring the Federal Acquisition Service and the Public Building Service together where it makes sense. Doesn't always make sense, but even when you're working on a contract for airline contracts, if you don't do a good job of that on the federal acquisition side of the house, then someone in an agency is going to get a bad view of you as an agency, and that could impact your public buildings business. But there are other cases where, particularly where agencies are in need of space and we provide it, where we just have not done well in the past at integrating the building itself, the furniture systems, the information technology, even vehicles, all that goes along with providing a workplace. So we have now, by having the Public Building Service and the Federal Acquisition Service come together, we now have a process by which automatically, at certain points in the process, they will come together and they will talk about needs and they will deliver those seamlessly. At the same time, the two customer groups are working together. For example, I've done a series of outreach visits to heads of other federal agencies, and the two groups work together, FAS and PBS, Federal Acquisition Service and Public Building Service, to put together a joint product that I then use as we visit Secretary of Veterans Affairs, for example. The public buildings plan will have a reference to the services that the Federal Acquisition Service has as a reminder to all of our customer service reps in public buildings that they should be talking about FAS federal acquisition programs and vice versa. So we've done a lot to promote this idea that we really are one big agency. And there are lots of models in the private sector where you have a number of business lines, but you have the same set of expectations as far as service levels and various business lines working together when it makes sense. And that's what we're trying to do in GSA.
Now, David, just transitioning here a bit, I understand that you are preparing to transition to a new government-wide telecommunications contract known as the Networks Program. I only have about a minute left, but could you elaborate on the Networks Program and how do the advanced technologies and services defined within this program serve as a platform, if you will, to transform the government's telecommunications infrastructure to something that's a bit more seamless and secure?
Well, we've come a long way from providing long-distance service, which is what the ancestor of this program used to be. You can get anything under the Networks contract, anything you can think of. And right now, the agencies, there are so many offerings. There are 50 versus 15 under the old FTS 2001 contract, it was called. Under Networks, there are 50 different services, IP voiceover, anything that is cutting edge. things that are in common use and things that we think are coming along are available under networks. We think it has the potential to be transformative. Some agencies are moving a little slowly. They're a little hesitant to transform at the same time as they're switching from the old network to a new one. So some will probably just slide over the same thing they've been buying from us and put it under this new contract. Other agencies are using it to rethink the entire way that they organize their business and their way of operating. So what we have put in place can range from just meeting the basic need to just being a very, very sophisticated set of communication tools that are available to all the federal agencies.
That's great. What about GSA's leadership role during the presidential transition? We will ask David Bibb, acting administrator at the U.S. General Services Administration, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.